The Warrior Soul Podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppingfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? This is Chris Albert, and welcome to yet another edition of the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is actually the first edition of the Warrior Soul Podcast that is being recorded outside of the original place that I started the podcast. I am currently at a staging point in the mountains of San Bernardino, and I will be here in this cabin for the next couple of weeks before we start heading out east. I am moving from California to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I'm really looking forward to that. Nothing against California. Well, yeah, I do have some things against Californians, but I want to say it is a really beautiful state. It's got some great people. It's got some beautiful countryside. It's just time for me to move on and time for me to start something else. So I'll be working with a company called Fortress Anchors out of Fort Lauderdale. They make marine anchors, and their product is entirely American made. And I couldn't be prouder to be working with that company to be filling that mission and to be supporting American manufacturing. It means the world to me. I'll be doing marketing for them. So really looking forward to that. And today I bring a very special guest to you. His name is Nick Pinault. He's known as the EMF guy on the internet, but, he wrote an article a few weeks ago called, I think it was 19 Inconvenient Facts About COVID-19 Testing, right? 19 Inconvenient Facts About COVID-19 Testing. And I'll post the article here for you to read. It was a really well-researched, really, well-written article. And he was one of the first people to really bring up the fact that, hey, we might be going overboard here with this whole government shutdown thing. I've thought this for a long time. From the day California shut down, I thought it was one of the worst cases of government overreach that I ever saw. That's not me saying that the virus isn't a real thing. That's not either of us saying that the virus is being caused by 5G towers. But it is to say that if you look at the numbers whether you're looking at our numbers, whether you're looking at the Chinese numbers, whether you're looking at the numbers in Sweden, where the government hasn't shut anything down, there is clear evidence that the government has overreacted to this situation. And it's hurting people. It's hurting our economy. It's hurting people who have put their lives into businesses. It is hurting people. It's hurting their families. It's hurting their children. It is causing rising suicide rates. It's causing rising rates of domestic violence. There is evidence that the 911 calls are off the charts right now with domestic violence calls. When you destabilize an economy, when you put military age males out of work, as many of you who listen to this podcast know, that is a secret for destabilizing society. And it's wrong. And so Nick and I talk about the evidence that suggests that this was overblown. He is very fair. He is very evidence-based. If you look at his article, there are tons and tons of citations on there. This isn't some conspiracy theory kind of thing. So if you disagree, feel free to. My suggestion is to take a look at the evidence that Nick presents. Make your own opinion on it. That's what this country is supposed to be about. We're supposed to have good debate about the issues. We're not supposed to be treating this like the Gestapo, where anybody who is a contrarian gets ostracized. We're supposed to have debates like this. So if you disagree, form your own opinion and come on, let's debate. But if you're coming at me like somebody who's some of these other people I'm seeing out there who just don't want to debate, they just want to throw a bunch of shit, then all I'm going to do is block you and frankly ignore you. So you guys will enjoy this episode, and I think you'll get a lot out of it. So with that, I also want to say thank you for listening to the Warrior Soul podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, feel free to write a review up on iTunes and feel free to share any one of these episodes out. We're here to empower the U.S. military veteran community to live their best lives and to show up as wiser, stronger, more capable human beings in the civilian world. So with that, guys, I won't delay any longer. Let's get into this conversation with Mr. Nick Pinault, the EMF guy. And we are talking about the COVID-19 crisis. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Where are you located right now?
Well, usually I'm in Montreal, but right now I'm in Sherbrooke. That's a 2-hour drive east of Montreal, and that's in Quebec, in Canada. Oh, for maybe people have no idea where this is.
Awesome. Reason I brought you on, you wrote Rational a few weeks ago about this situation we're currently all in, about the panic surrounding COVID-19. And, you know, just from my end, as I was looking out, you know, at what was going on in the news universe, it was death, destruction, apocalypse, you know, people dying, this, that. And it seemed like people were tossing a lot of logic to the side in order to go with a certain narrative of what's going out there right now in the world. And it seems to me as if there is almost a backlash against anybody who tries to bring any other logical answer to the table aside from the fact that they think we're in the apocalypse and that, you know, All this crazy things are going on and that maybe this crazy shutdown that we're doing is not a good idea. You know, I want to talk about the article, but did you get any backlash for the article when you put it up?
I, actually, no, surprisingly, no. I think that's because I'm someone who actually, that won't be the case for a lot of people listening to this, but I'm one to avoid conflict you know, so that's probably not something that people in the military tend to do, right? But it makes me very balanced in the sense that I try not to get into the politics, the argument, this I'm right, you're wrong kind of thing. That oftentimes, if you have a very partisan view, like this is the truth, and everyone else thinking otherwise is an idiot, you tend to attract people to you that love you, and then you also attract people that hate you at the same time. So I try to be balanced enough and really push the politics aside in most of what I do. I do my work around the effects of radio frequency radiation emitted by cell phone. It's a charged topic in itself. So to me, I don't need to get into the politics, and I stick to what the scientists say. So I love to look at the science and the facts. And I got basically one person who told me I have the reasoning ability of a third grader, and that's about it. That person wasn't happy with my article, and I said, "Well," he said, "not to call it out on him," and everyone is. I've overreacted myself during this crisis. It's very hard on the nerves for everyone, whether it's the lockdown or just the overall stress, the images we see about the deaths everywhere, and the uncertainty, the agendas. I mean, it's a stressful situation. So I'm not to blame the guy, but he said, I'm a former logic teacher, and you have the rational ability or reasoning ability of a third grader. And I said, well, if you're a logic teacher, you know that your comment is just basically an ad hominem attack against me. You haven't argued a single point about the article. And what happened is the person deleted his comment. So, you know, what I'm looking for is really people who argue with the data and not try to argue with me like, oh, you don't have any credentials, or it kind of attack you personally. I think it's just a false of logic doing that. And unfortunately in the US, you know, I'm in Canada, so I'm kind of far enough from the US kind of left versus right, or Democrats versus Republicans, or this versus that. And I see it from afar. And I think a lot of people are falling into this is a political issue. Like at the moment, it's just like that. Democrats seem to think that coronavirus is extremely dangerous, and Republicans, or I'd say Americans, who have a stronger sense that we need to fight for our rights, right? To just go outside and move on with our lives, right? Because a lockdown is so, it's giving the government a lot of power. That's there's no denying that. Well, they seem to be more on the side, well, our rights matter more. And they look at the numbers and they see the same thing that I'm seeing. So, you know, in the end, it's not I didn't make it a political issue. And I think that's why there's been no backlash so far, which is very surprising, because overall, as you mentioned, people get very, very emotional. If you even mention things that in the past, in past situations, would have been just considered participating in an open democratic debate, which is, well, For example, the first thing that just, I think even people listening to this, if you don't agree with like the COVID dangerosity, like how dangerous it is it a very killer virus, or is it just like the seasonal flu? Let's not even get into that. I think the main argument that is the strongest is that when we look at intervention that touch everybody, like a lockdown, right, and that has a detrimental effect on the economy, to say the least. Some call it, the worst crisis that we've ever seen, with almost 30 million Americans losing their job within 6 weeks, or at least filing for insurance claims. The same thing is seen across all countries. Even countries that have not locked down, like Sweden, have seen basically their business reduced to 20% of what it has been, since the tourism industry is dead. And so the consequences of that are economical. And that's when people make the mistake of saying, oh, well, lives matter more than money. Yes, I agree with that. I'm a humanist myself. Like every life matters, but the health consequences of an economic crisis is something that is known. We've seen economic crises throughout history, and we have the data that supports the idea that if people become poor, there's more addiction. There's more suicides. There's more depression, anxiety, domestic violence. People buy more guns and some shoot them by mistake. Violence, uncertainty and poverty leads to death. So that's something that is known. And just that in itself is controversial to say these days, which is crazy because in the end, and I've seen several scientists made this argument, but they're not reported in the media because it's so inconvenient. Well, a lockdown saves people, maybe, and it will kill people too. And that's inconvenient because who do we choose to save and to kill, right? Well, that's right. We need to include everyone. That's Dr. David Katz, who's a guy from Yale, who has done an interview just last week, I think, about that. And he said, we need to include everyone, all of society in this decision, which means that if you choose to continue the lockdown, you will see more suicides. You need to look at the data and your prediction models as far as how many lives are saved. If they don't include what's called the deaths of despair, the consequences of a lockdown, well, it's straight up silly. And guess what? Well, unfortunately, the modeling that we have relied on in America, same thing in Canada, same thing in Quebec, and mainly from the UK, the Imperial College of London, they do not include the consequences, how many lives could be lost from a lockdown. So it's a one-sided view of an issue, and it does not include the economic consequences and its related health consequences.
Yeah, I think that because this is the thing, I think one of the things we're seeing out there is that the people who say that they're for the lockdown, they say we're going with the best scientific advice possible. And one of the things that, well, I've done a bit of modeling myself. I was did PhD work in social science and we used to use models to make hypotheses. But when it comes to a model is not an accurate reflection of reality. It is something that helps us potentially to understand that reality better if our assumptions are correct.
Exactly. And
the thing is, when we're looking at something like this, there's a lot of assumptions that you know are coming out of left field where we don't know, we've never faced anything like this before, right? And so those assumptions that we're basing shutting down the whole world economy on, in many ways they might be, you know, completely you know, in outer space somewhere. And what I liked about your article is that, you know, you brought up these questions. Here's some facts about COVID-19 testing that, you know, might put us on shaky ground as far as this shutdown goes.
There's a lot of as far as testing goes, you know, it's a mess overall. How can I say this? It's a lot of uncertainty in testing. There's false positive where you test for COVID-19, you say, oh yes, you have COVID-19. In reality, you don't. So it's a false positive. Right. The opposite is also true. There's a lot of false negative. I've seen 15% lately as a number that is more recent than even my article. So 15% false negative might be even more dangerous because you say, well, you don't have COVID-19. Go ahead and mix in with the elderly. In reality, you had it, but it wasn't detected. So in that case, sometimes they run multiple tests. So in reality, the test is unreliable. And there's also arguments that I've seen just yesterday. So it's brand new info. I'm just looking at news every single day. Dr. Wodarg from Germany has identified that for the first time, the CDC has admitted that the coronavirus or COVID-19 sequence has been found via the same RT-PCR test that has been used so far in cats. And what he argues is that, wait a minute, if you can detect COVID-19 in cats, it's not like some people took that news and said, oh my God, COVID-19 is spreading in cats now and we get a shelter or animals. And actually I was of that impression. I was like, oh my God, that's concerning. What are we going to do with dogs and whatnot? So, but it's not, his view is that this proves that the test is not specific enough. And in cats, it probably detects other coronaviruses because coronaviruses are known to be mainly viruses in animals. And this is why, well, the Wuhan strain, or let's say the SARS-CoV-2 is a strain that has, or it's plausible that it came from bats, or anyway, there's a whole lot of scientific debate over that. But basically, if you can detect it in cats, it might mean that the test itself is not precise enough to detect SARS-CoV-2. It might detect just SARS, or it might detect other coronaviruses that we know are in circulation. And that's something, you know, that not a lot of people known at the beginning of this, me included. I haven't studied virology. Really, I didn't really care for it because I'm on another topic altogether. But I had to learn it. Basically, I learned that, you know, in circulation, in the whole broad category, every winter or even all year long of flu-like illnesses, you have a lot of different viruses or even bacterial infections that are known to cause what's called the flu-like illnesses. And these can also include colds, for example. So you have the flu, you have cold, and it can lead to complications like pneumonia. And these are more deadly for the elderly and with pre-existing conditions. So very, very similar as the death profile we see from COVID-19. So all that to say that you have coronaviruses, it's an entire class of different viruses, and we have certain strains that scientists know are more prevalent, and this will vary from season to season. And generally speaking, in Germany, and that's the work of Dr. Wodarg, he says 7 to 15% are coronaviruses usually in these diseases. So it's not something new that we have coronaviruses, which also It demonstrates the possibility that if the test is not specific enough, well, you can maybe think this is COVID-19, this is the new coronavirus, when in reality, it might be older strains or strains that are present in millions of people around the world every single year.
Right. And so I had somebody else on who was talking about this. I mean, it's upwards of close to a potentially 80% false positive rate, right?
Yeah. There's one study in China that has been, it now has been retracted, and I don't know why exactly. And the main researcher in China said it was basically for political reasons, to put it very. So I think in China, I don't believe in conspiracies, but I mean the Communist Party is known to be not so gentle on people who publish certain things or say certain things. So who knows what happened with this study? But if it's right, it did show 80% false positive. I have seen 50% false positive from other studies. I have seen several other indications that these tests are not so reliable. So it really begs into question how many cases there are really. But in reality, all this doesn't matter that much now in the story, because now the serological studies, so when you study population at random, basically in different states or different cities or different countries, and you look at the presence of antibodies. Now, this can tell you if the person has the virus or had the virus in the past. It's kind of the virus leaving a mark on the ground as it goes by. It goes into your home and there are they left stains on the floor. So that's the same thing here. So that's a marker for virus that has been in people's body. And you look at, there's been so many serological studies just in the US that it's almost overwhelming to look at. But in New York State, as I have seen numbers as high as 40% of the entire population could have had the COVID-19 as of now. So if that's true, well, it does mean that just in the city of New York City, there's almost the same number of people who might have had COVID compared to the entire world right now, which is 3 million confirmed cases. So if these numbers are true, it means that, well, it doesn't matter that much how many tests we do at the moment, because in reality, the spread is way beyond what we thought. In Santa Clara County in California, Stanford has showed that it was 50 to 85 times more prevalence than what was previously thought. So imagine that previously we thought there's only 1,000 people in California who had COVID. Now we realize it's actually 50,000 to 85,000. And it makes it It means two things, right? It can be a bad news because, oh my God, we cannot control this virus. But in reality, as Stanford scientists have said themselves, there's Jay Bhattacharya, who was interviewed 10 days ago about that. He said, well, I don't believe we can contain the virus anymore. You know, people say flatten the curve, but I think flattening the curve, yes, to keep hospitals in check. But in reality, aside from New York City and certain key areas in the world, hospitals are not overwhelmed. In Quebec, for example, we have around 1,000 beds in the ICU that are occupied and 8,000 total capacity. So it's mainly empty. So if your medical system can handle these extra hospitalization, then the it's okay. You can actually have COVID-19 in circulation. People get it and the hospitalized will be able to take care of. That was the entire argument from day one. If you cannot, if the curve goes like this and up on the ceiling, well, eventually your medical system crumbles and then you have excessive deaths that could have been prevented. And that's exactly what flattening the curve is all about. But people have started distorting this idea, I think. Even health officials in Quebec have said, you know what, we're going to reopen schools May 11th, only primary schools, and the kids are still going to do social distancing. And I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, first, COVID-19 does not kill much people under 18 years old. So the teenagers and children are actually less at risk from COVID, according to all the data we have worldwide, compared to the flu. So the flu has already killed around, I think it's 150 or 170 kids in the US so far, or was it in New York City alone? I think it's all of US. So it's killing some people, the flu, some children, especially those at risk, maybe with leukemia and different pre-existing conditions, but even maybe healthy ones. But COVID overall is less dangerous than the flu. So we shouldn't really, we can at this point, I think this is concerning for the elderly, the very sick people with compromised immune system. There's an argument for that. But for kids, there's not. It's fear right now that I see. And you know, in the press conference, our Prime Minister Legault really said, you know, we're going to reopen schools, but in case there's an outbreak of COVID, we might close the school again. And they seem to be trying to be doing two things at once. First, they talked about herd immunity and getting children infected with COVID. So that way, after that, they are quite potentially or plausibly immune to COVID. So then they can go with their grandparents and they won't really be transmitting the virus, or at least they will themselves develop an immunity. And at one point, when you have 50, 60% of the population that has immunity to a virus, generally it dies down because there's no one to give it to. So it's really what this herd immunity idea was all about. So that's the first idea. And the second idea is, well, we don't want anyone to catch COVID ever. So it doesn't work. It's kind of two approaches that melt into one that are completely contradictory. And I see that why they're doing that is that the government, and whether it's in Quebec or in most states in the US, depending on the state you're in, especially California and the states that are, let's say, on the gun right now about COVID, they're literally still freaking out. Their argument becomes, I never want COVID. I'm too afraid of COVID. And it has become a thing where even parents don't want their kids to go outside because they think they're going to die from COVID. Even if the data clearly states that the flu is more dangerous for kids, we should have kids just go on with their lives, I think. And then the teachers teaching their kids, these kids should probably be a little bit younger than usual and be in good health. And there's arguments for that. But overall, the schools can be reopened. And that's why Switzerland and the Netherlands and Denmark has already reopened schools. It's more than, it's almost 2 weeks ago now. So, you know, there's a lot of confusion about it. And I think it's mainly fear-driven at this point and not data-driven, what we're seeing overall, the paranoia around children especially.
Right. And you know, so, like you said, there's a lot of contradictory stuff coming out. I mean, we keep hearing about herd immunity, but we're told to stay inside, to not come in contact with anybody or anything like that. And, you know, I think there's this, and this might be a bad analogy, but, you know, I look at some of these people, because I look at social media from time to time. I try not to, but I do. Yeah. And I'll look at the comments and, you know, as you said, people don't want to look at studies. And what it reminds me of is that Japanese soldier who was found in, you know, 1972 on a Filipino island, and he had to have like his old commanding officer tell him that the war was over as far as World War II was concerned. I feel like that's the kind of mentality a lot of people are adapting about this. They don't want to see hear any statistics about the truth. That Stanford study you mentioned, I know it caught a bunch of backlash from people, from fellow scientists, even, you know, just for exploring the possibility that this stuff might be overblown. And so it's, the psychology to me is one of the more interesting factors to this. It's a little bit disturbing to me, but it's one of the more interesting factors to this.
It is, you know, there's such thing as the confirmation bias. I'm not immune to it. It means everyone is looking to confirm what they think they already know. So I already know, let's say in my head, I already know that COVID is not dangerous. Then a news comes, I see on my social media feed, COVID is not dangerous. And I'm like, yeah, I knew it. And then the opposite would be COVID is super dangerous. There's more cases, more death. I knew it is dangerous. So I'm going to stay inside. So everyone is kind of confirming their own biases in this story. But looking at the data, you know, people who have criticized Stanford for their findings and the fact that basically what they said, and one of the researchers on it was John Ioannidis, who's one of the most prestigious U.S. scientists at the moment who's still alive. Right. This guy is the top 100 scientists in the world at the moment. He's been cited over 100,000 times in the medical literature or in other studies. So just to give you an example, like this is not a classic amount of citations. It's an overwhelming amount of citations. So he's extremely respected, especially for his work around biases. Anyway, so Ioannidis reveals that, and he says, well, if we extrapolate these results to all of the population, it means that the death rate we're going to see in the overall population, so if we take all ages, all people, will be similar as a seasonal flu. So 0.1% to 0.4%. And this is why people jump on that and who are convinced COVID is extremely deadly, and they've been traumatized by the last months of media coverage for sure. They say, no, this can't be true. This is unacceptable. This is ludicrous. And even this is dangerous information, because now people will stop doing social distancing and everyone would die. Well, it's what they're missing is that at the same time that study was published, I identified, what is it? I mean, I could, if I dug more, there's probably 35 similar studies that show the same things around the world. In Sweden, so Stanford was published April 17th. They found 0.1% to 0.4% mortality based on antibodies. Sweden found 11% had antibodies, similar results. In elderly homes, they found 33% antibodies on April 19. There's been another study in the LA county, April 20th, 55 times more cases than previously thought. So something similar as Santa Clara. It doesn't stop. There's a University of Helsinki, so a Finnish epidemiology professor, Mikko Ponio, who said, well, looking at the data, same thing, 0.1%. There's been the Danish blood donor study where their infection fatality ratio, so the death rate, in other words, 0.06% to 0.14%. It never stops. There's now the New York data that came out. There's the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine at the University of Oxford in the UK. They argue the same thing, 0.1 to 0.36, sorry. There's the Newcastle County. There's the Miami study. There's the Geneva study in Switzerland. There's the France antibody study, the Colorado, the other things in Germany. The homeless in Boston had 36% of them had the virus, most asymptomatic. And then the death rate among the homeless was extremely, extremely low. So it's not one thing. I could go, I could go on and on and on, and I'm writing on a new article, and it's going to take me, I think, 40, 50 more hours because there's too much data out there. But basically, it's not one thing, right? It's people react to this one study and say, oh, it might be wrong for this reason. But look overall what has been published in every single country who has done these serological studies. So you look for antibodies in random populations, and every study finds that the prevalence of COVID has been underestimated by 50 to 100 times. And what this means is basically our timeline was wrong. We thought that COVID, for example, in the US, that the first death was, I think, I don't remember the exact timeline. Sorry, don't quote me on this one. But basically, it puts it several weeks before what we thought was the first death. It's actually several weeks before that. So in other words, COVID was spreading while the media and everyone thought, well, oh, COVID is kind of going on in Europe and we hope it's not coming to us. It was actually already there. And it means that we are trying to apply, you know, a lockdown and contact tracing, kind of finding, oh, Nick has the virus and now he talked with Jerry and now Jerry has the virus and he went to the mailman, and then you kind of contact trace. They've done that in South Korea. They've done that in China when you have the technology to do so. Unfortunately, it does require a lot of surveillance technologies. So there's it can be good to kind of contain the spread, but it was too slow. Our response was, we basically had the response that we should have had at the beginning, but we weren't aware that COVID was everywhere. So at the moment, if COVID has been seen in 40% of the population in New York State, the stopping the spread and that idea that, no, I never want COVID in my life, well, everyone's going to get it or almost. So we can protect to some extent the people who might get killed from it. And I'm all for it. There's different solutions we could apply for that. And it's still unclear how we're going to protect them for the end of time, right? Because, I mean, I'm thinking about my wife's grandfather. He's almost 95 and he's stuck in his apartment. You know, it's a nursing home and they have small apartments. They're still independent. He's still cooking his own meals or sometimes. And at the moment, it's difficult for me because at the moment he's pretty much a prisoner, but for medical reasons. So, you know, it's all right because I want him to thrive and to survive. And yes, he's at risk. He's 95. I mean, you're at risk from anything at that age. He's frail. And I mean, this is normal stuff. At 95, I'll be the same. But right. What do we do with him? Because he's sheltered, he's staying in the apartment, he cannot play cards with his buddies, he cannot dance anymore, and all the activities he used to be doing to keep himself in good health, including just going into the sunshine, taking a walk, he cannot do anything, and he's basically having his meal delivered in front of the door like a prisoner. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing. I'm kind of stuck at the moment knowing what we'll do with the elderly and people who want to protect. But what I'm convinced of at the moment, based on everything I've told you so far, is that, well, 0.1%, even if it's 0.5, we need to restart the economy because it is a low death rate for people under 65 without pre-existing conditions. So people who are healthy and able to work, we need to go back to our normal lives, basically, including children. And I think that, unfortunately, the shock has been so tremendous that parents are still unsure who to believe, what to believe. And the government, unfortunately, is not taking a stand and saying, you know what, new data has come out, go back to work, go back to your home. They've done that in certain states in the US. And I was impressed with that, often not necessarily because of science, but for constitutional reasons, but it's still valid. You know, I'm not here to judge that, but I think they're doing the right thing. Going back and protecting those who might be more frail with all we can, testing in nursing homes and continuing to study how to better treat those who do fall ill, those who get hospitalized. And we're seeing progress in that. We're seeing that maybe ventilators are not the best thing to do. And you know, this morning I was in shock. I saw a study published April 22nd, 5,700 patients in New York City who have had COVID and were hospitalized. And the mortality rate among those who were on ventilators 65 years old and older is 97.2%. This is not a standard mortality rate for people on ventilators. So it does mean that the procedures that we're taking are possibly causing more harm than good, and they need to be revised. And at the same time, other hospitals have been kind of steering away from ventilators to great avail. So again, it's a whole medical mess. I'm not here to put blame on what doctors have been doing or not. This is a new threat, possibly a new disease, yes, but we need to react fast. And I think that unfortunately the politicians have not had the courage so far to say, you know what, this is new data that we have. There's 30 studies around the world. It is safe to go back there, restart the economy, minimize the side effects of the lockdowns, which we've done, because a lot of people will be in poverty, and governments like in Quebec have been printing money. Yeah, we're just going to print money and give you checks. That's cool. Well, there are future consequences for my children here and for me and for three generations down. So it's not, we can help people short term, but that is also a problem. We need to restart the economy. We need to make people confident that they can reinvest, that they can purchase homes, that they can move on with their lives. And at the moment, it seems like most people in positions of power are kind of doing two things. Yes, if they've seen the data, they kind of say, okay, well, we're going to reopen the floodgates a little bit, like we're doing in Quebec. But at the same time, they're stuck with the story that, no, don't worry, I'm going to protect you from COVID. So they're not taking a stand with the scientists to say, this is not as dangerous, or not even a fraction as dangerous for the overall population as the WHO initially said, 3.4% mortality. That was very early. And that was, I think, unfortunately, something that ended up hurting a lot of people, these early figures and the way they've been recuperated in the media. But this is not the story right now. It is a very, very different story. And like you said, a lot of people don't want to hear about these numbers. And they're like, you're trying to shake them into reading the studies and seeing that, the evidence is there that the mortality rate for the overall population will be similar as the flu season, which is a good argument to stop the lockdowns, get people back to work. And then, of course, we can have different versions of that depending on your medical system. That's a whole point. So if your medical system is overwhelmed, maybe you slow it down a bit. But if it's not, here in Quebec, it's empty. In a lot of states, hospitals in Minnesota, what is it? I cannot find my numbers here. I think it was something like the Minnesota medical system is losing $40 million a day at the moment. So, you know, a lot of hospitals are going broke. A lot of medical systems are going broke because people don't show up at the hospitals right now for other things. And some of it is because of fear, and some of it is because we've shut down everything to treat just COVID patients. Well, it's time to readjust now. The COVID patients are not there, right? They're there in certain states, in certain hospitals. We can take care of those. And these are exceptions and not the norm. We need to reopen right now. We need to be confident that things will be okay, because the science is there. And if we make a mistake, we can always come back to the freaking lockdown like Quebec recently said 2 days ago. Oh, we'll just lock down again. Okay, well, we have that option. Cool. But in the meantime, I really doubt we're seeing that, because there's a downward trend in the number of deaths, the number of infections. The entire planet, except certain areas that are getting it late, maybe some parts of Africa. But at the moment, it looks like the crisis has been averted and the death rates simply aren't there. So I don't see any reason against lifting up the lockdowns, getting people back to school, except if your hospitals are still overwhelmed. In that case, we got to take care of that first, and then you open the floodgates gradually. But yeah, that's really, there's no argument at the moment.
I really think, And part of this is the amount of political division here in the United States. I mean, obviously, yep. It's kind of the elephant in the room, right? People hate President Trump, and anything that President Trump says, they're going to oppose, whether it's got logic to it or not. Obviously, he said some things where he should have put his foot in his mouth, but at the same time, you know. I think that there's some logic to some of the things he brings to the table. And, you know, it just seems to me that division, that unwillingness to work together is just hurting us more than anything right now.
I agree completely. And as a non-American from the outside, I have a hard time finding solutions to that problem. The only thing I can say is that whether you're a Democrat or Republican, alt-right, alt-left, whatever you want, or nothing, no attached to anything, I don't really care. But look at the data. Try to look at the science. Follow certain scientists from the U.S. if you want. John Ioannidis is one that is great at Stanford. He's one of the top, and what he's saying is sound. It's rational. There are good interviews that he's done where he really explains his position. In his opinion, I mean, yeah, I'm not the scientist here. I'm just merely the messenger of what Ioannidis has been saying. Reopen, lift the lockdown. So let's look at scientists who are really doing science and not politics here. And unfortunately, if you look at even Anthony Fauci, there's a lot of conflicts of interest that I don't like and that I don't see addressed. And that's not to say that everyone is evil. I don't get into conspiracies. Once you get into it too deep, there's a place and time for that, but that's not my style. If people involved in this will get money if a vaccine is developed versus other solutions to fight the virus, I have a problem with that. That's called a conflict of interest. My conflict of interest in COVID is basically nothing. Well, maybe I'll get more clicks on my website, and that's my business. I write on the internet. I produce information about EMS, and I want to sell my books. So maybe that's my conflict of interest, but at least I'm disclosing it. You know, the fact that Bill Gates is on TV on the CNN special a few weeks back with Anderson Cooper, and he's basically the spokesperson for COVID and how dangerous it is. And I don't see, Bill, why are you the guy who's going to give advice on that? Right. I don't see it. I don't think, so he's not a medical expert. He might have a lot of experience with vaccine policy and philanthropic work. And even then, there's a lot of rabbit holes to go down to whether this has been good for humanity or not. But let's not even get into that. The fact that he strongly believes that vaccines are the answer. Okay, that's fine, but he has a bias towards vaccination, and that's fine. But we should interview our U.S.-based or North American-based scientists to say, okay, what do you think? And this is not Anthony Fauci. This is John Ioannidis. This is Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford and a few others that have been talking and saying, well, the numbers aren't there. The data isn't there. And basically, the first time I saw Ioannidis in a major newspaper article, it was in the Wall Street Journal, I think, or might have been Washington Post a few days back. So this is the first time he's quoted in the media, except from one small article on March 17. So basically, the media doesn't want to talk to the guy, but he's one of the best resources we can have in the midst of all this craziness. So he should be on TV, or maybe we could have one scientist that believes lockdowns are effective and a second one, lockdowns are not effective. Let's debate. This is the way you come to a balanced understanding. If you just have Bill Gates on, it makes zero sense to me. So there's a lot of examples throughout this crisis of relying on people who have tremendous conflicts of interest. And let's just talk about WHO. I'm not an expert on WHO. I've seen reports, and it doesn't date from yesterday. It dates from 20 years back now, about WHO being greatly influenced by lobbyists, by different corporate interests. And basically, they've been defunded by a lot of nations. And instead, you get philanthropists and you get donations, basically, to the WHO that might or might not influence their decisions, but right. you decide. It's right. called a conflict of interest. So the WHO is becoming, in my mind, in my interpretations, less and less independent as time flies by. So the decision that Trump made of to defund WHO, maybe the way he explained it wasn't so, they called it wrong. And you know, no, it's more than that. I think there's fishy things happening at a lot of large organizations. And if there's corporate interest in these organizations, then yeah, I don't think WHO is in the right position to make their calls. And you know, something that nearly killed me 2 days ago is when WHO came out, and even after all these studies I mentioned, 0.1%, 0.4%, it looks like the next seasonal flu season, the deaths worldwide are slowing down tremendously. We're seeing 200,000 deaths, and a lot of these deaths will end up not being COVID deaths, and that's another topic in itself. But I think not even half that are COVID deaths. In fact, are deaths due to other things. But if we don't get into that, let's take the face value number, 200,000 respiratory infections from COVID and deaths related to that. It's not a huge figure compared to 2.6 million deaths yearly worldwide from respiratory infections. So it's right. not such a huge deal. But even with that in mind, the WHO came out 2-3 days ago and said, and made the comparison again, comparing COVID with the Spanish flu, which is
yeah.
unacceptable. This is yeah. completely ludicrous. You shouldn't say that. This is fear-mongering at this point. And I simply don't understand, like, this. I told that to my wife. She said, really? I mean, we're kind of past that now. It's not the Spanish flu. Maybe it's like the Hong Kong flu, and the death rate was 0.5%. And yeah, it's more deadly than the seasonal flu. Or maybe it is like a seasonal flu. But it's not the Spanish flu. The Spanish flu killed 2% overall. And it's not yeah. like Ebola. And it's not like other transmissible diseases that we know are way, way more dangerous than COVID. So I think at this point, the WHO should seriously be ignored. I don't know how. And again, I'm super polite. Other people would be screaming at the WHO. But I think we need to come back to local expertise. So in the US, have an independent, multidisciplinary committee that is created with people from Stanford, the best minds in the US, and they come to an agreement. Same thing in Canada. We could have a lot of good Canadian experts and come to an agreement. And then if WHO says something, we might or might not agree with them, but at least we have local expertise, and we're not outsourcing our brains so much that now we're just waiting to see what the WHO tells us, and we trust whatever they come up with. So
yeah,
basically what's important at this point is to note that Sweden, this is what they've done. They had several experts, their own scientists, top level scientists, and they've been consulting them before consulting the rest of the world. So it's a kind of nationalism as far as scientific expertise goes that I think needs to be brought back, because right. you need to believe in your scientists that you know are independent, and not in an international organization that's funded by people who you don't know who's what agenda they have, or what corporate interests, or what are their plans. You need to have something local. And Sweden did that. They had all the pressure of the planet to go into lockdown. They didn't. And at the moment, some people are kind of pointing fingers. Oh, you see, they have more deaths per capita than their neighbors. But overall, the crisis has been completely averted, and the death rates are comparable, again, to the studies I've cited. So Sweden, their non-lockdown measures have been proven right all along. That's the only way I can say it right now.
Right. You know, I mean, there's so much here. There's so many aspects to this issue. You know, and I also want to mention, got a couple of minutes left, because sure. this is not your central work in what you do. You're normally focused on EMFs. You're the author of a book called The Non-Tinfoil Hat Guide to EMFs.
Yeah.
And somehow this all got played in with the 5G situation, yeah, with what David Icke was saying. And then my friend Brian Rose eventually had a video removed from YouTube, and Facebook is now, if you mention anything regard to 5G, if you mention anything regard to COVID-19 and any alternative to what the WHO says, is now diverting viewers to the WHO to see what their guidelines are on COVID-19. So we have this kind of streamlining of I guess you could say any kind of relevant argument that would go against their truth as to what they're saying, yeah, is now being diverted back to the standard narrative. One, what's your take on that as far as the free speech and the way that's being handled? And number two, what's your take on, you know, some of these theories about 5G and people burning down towers and things like that?
Sure. Well, there's a lot there. I'll try to be concise. So quickly, what I think is that the presence of electrosmog in the air, because it's really what this is. Let's start with smog, okay? There's been good studies that have came out just last week about the strong correlation between smog, the presence of smog, or especially the 2.5 ppm particles that we know are the most dangerous for our respiratory tracts, and COVID-19 deaths. This link isn't so implausible. It's not that controversial either. So people say, oh yeah, you know, smog, and then your lungs are all messed up and then you get COVID, and well, it's an infection of the lungs. So, you know, you put two and two together and it makes sense that it probably aggravates or even puts you in a very weak spot as far as lung health goes. So that's something that has been seen, you know, the high smog levels in New York City, in Northern Italy, in Spain, in Wuhan. So all the worst outbreaks have been seen in very high smog areas. It's a correlation, it's not causation, but it just adds, it's another type of pre-existing condition. We know that people with pre-existing condition or just old age, if you're 65 and over, well, that's one characteristic that you fall into this category of higher risk for COVID, but also environmental. If you live in a city where the air that you breathe damages your lung over time, that's another stress to your body that that puts you at risk for COVID infection. I think that's demonstrated. I think it's fair, and I don't think most people would argue with that. We also have similar studies with SARS in 2003, where areas that were more touched with SARS infections generally were the highest pollution areas in China and around the world. So it's something that just makes sense. As far as electrosmog goes, it's still very controversial because just the recognition that EMFs or electromagnetic fields, so like let's say radiation from your cell phone or Wi-Fi routers or these cell phone towers, do something to the human body is still controversial in itself. So it's a topic that's emerging scientifically, and WHO for what it's worth, because I've been talking against them, they've been classifying EMFs as a class 2B carcinogen since 2011, and following the same criteria that have been used during this 2011 decision, but looking at the new data that has come out in the last 10 years as far as the link between radio frequency radiation from your cell phone and brain cancer, for example, or different types of cancer, a lot of independent scientists say, you know what, it should be reclassified higher as a class 2A, which is probable carcinogen, or a class 1 definite carcinogen, which would put your cell phone radiation in the same category as smoking or asbestos. So it's really what is emerging in EMF science right now is that probably we're going to see, well, the industry, of course, doesn't want that, but eventually we're going to see your cell phone radiation being flagged with a cancer risk sticker. It's already starting in some countries. Even in Russia, they have great science around that and recognition of the problem. And whatever you think of Russia, I don't care. But basically, when it comes to EMFs, they are really pioneers, and they're starting to put labels on different products that says, well, don't put it near your head. You can have it a little bit distance where you can use speakerphone, for example. So that's right. The main issue. So we're starting to have a scientific understanding. And then people have hypothesize that a high 5G area, 5G is the fifth generation of wireless or cellular network. So basically, it requires the installation of millions more antennas throughout the world. And in the city of Wuhan itself, 5G has been activated in December, and they've made the correlation that, COVID, some people have went as far as saying COVID doesn't exist. And in fact, what we're seeing is people reacting to the 5G towers. And this range from this extreme understanding that COVID doesn't exist to maybe it's a cofactor. So 5G made it more likely to catch a COVID infection, or maybe people's immune systems have been weakened by the radiation, and then you get the virus and you cannot combat it as easily. I think it makes sense. The data on EMFs and immune system isn't definitive, but it is likely. I would say it is likely. I feel confident to say, you know what, if you live in a city and you're exposed to cell phone towers, we know it impacts sleep, for example. So your sleep quality goes down, your healing ability goes down. We know that sleep deprivation will have a detrimental effect on your immune system. So there are a lot of consequences of living right next to a cell phone tower that, I'm saying that, and a lot of people would argue, no, there's no effect. But there's a lot of good studies that do show a strong correlation of people's health reducing when you get closer and closer and closer to a cell phone tower. So is it 5G that caused the entire COVID thing? I don't think so. But you know what happened is that I started researching that link, and I simply didn't find that COVID was an issue explosive enough to really want to pinpoint it on anything else. Because in the end, if the mortality is so low, if it's basically, some have called it, I find the term in English so funny, a nothing burger. I love it. So basically, they've called it basically a non-issue, a kind of a scientific fiasco, where we thought it would kill millions and millions and millions of Americans. And yet, yes, it did kill people. And yes, that is tragic. But we don't know what fraction of this are really COVID deaths. So it's even with further research, I think we're going to find that overall, it hasn't been such a huge issue compared to other issues that we have in today's society, including cancer and a lot of pressing issues that kill a lot of people. So because of that, of my positioning, finding that, you know, COVID is not as dangerous as they claim it is, I didn't want to go forward and say, oh, it is 5G, or it is that, or is it that? I'm like, well, it's not an issue per se. And I think it has been a little bit confusing, the message about 5G radiation and whatnot. So I don't deny that there's a possible correlation, just like with smog. If you live in a high electrosmog environment, maybe you're more prone to infections. I would tend to think that myself. And a high electrosmog environment is really simple. It's a city. but it also correlates with population density. It correlates with the number of people you kiss, you hug, you go near to. So your potential for infectious disease is also much higher. So we don't know if it's causation, correlation, or a little bit of both. So it's really hard to say. But overall, 5G, what it means for the average person listening to this is just more and more and more electrosmog. So, you know, the science is bizarre, because when it comes to cell phone radiation, users want more speed. They want more download. They want the 4K videos on their new iPhone and whatnot, but they don't want the radiation. So most people want, like, oh no, I don't want to see the cell phone tower. I know it's dangerous. I don't want to put it near my head. So it's bizarre, because the users want more speed. They want to watch 4K videos on their subway train, on their new iPhone, but they don't want the radiation. So if you tell them the radiation isn't good for you, they're like, oh yeah, you're right. It's super dangerous. So it's kind of very ironic where we're at. And at the same time, the same irony is seen in overall in society, where science is showing every year that goes by, there's more and more data showing that this type of radiation is bad for you. But at the same time, we install more and more and more antennas, and with 5G, it's going to be millions more. So it's a bizarre state of affairs. And very quickly, if I can summarize the 5G problem, is just more electrosmog. So do we want more electrosmog, or should we have less of it? And probably it's the same thing at the moment as starting to install like factories everywhere that are polluting the air. And we know that smog is going to increase 10,000% across the US. No one would want that, but you see it. You see the clouds and you would say, oh my God, no, that's ludicrous. We don't want that. We want smoke-free factories and zero waste technologies. So we have to demand that the technologies require lesser and lesser and lesser radiation to function the same. And right now it's not a requirement, and even the average user isn't demanding for these safer technologies. So that's really why I'm still advocating for that, and why I wrote my book 3 years ago. And it's still, unfortunately, it's a problem that's still growing. So we're still in that increasingly problematic curve of electrosmog. And eventually it's going to go down, because we're going to find new ways to have more wired connection. I'm on a wired computer. I have an Ethernet cable plugged in. So you can, there's a lot of things that you can do. And with cellular communications, we're going to have to find better ways to emit less and have better connectivity. If engineers put their minds to that, it will be possible, but it has to be mandated by the government. And at the moment, the radiation limit rules are extremely lenient, to say the least. They basically can do whatever they want. So this is the 5G problem. And as far as censorship goes, it's horrible what we're seeing. Because these companies, YouTube, Facebook, and all the tech giants, I just don't know what's in their mind. They want to do good. I think some of them working for the corporations want to do good and say, you know what, we're going to fight misinformation. But the problem is, who's saying what is misinformation? We don't have an independent committee on the ultimate truth worldwide at the UN, or even the UN is another topic of discussion. Yeah. But we don't have an independent committee on truth. So who's deciding what is credible and what is not? Well, right now, anything that isn't WHO will get banned if it's COVID related. And WHO, we know there's probably huge conflicts of interest. So we're in deep trouble. We're getting censored and the truth is getting distilled down. And, you know, freedom of speech is really getting crushed at the moment. And because of that 5G COVID link story and people making theories, they've been starting to ban all 5G related content. So even me, for my work, I don't make that link. I'm not engaging in that discussion that much, but I will probably get penalized on Google. I might get banned from Facebook, from YouTube. And it will be more, not impossible, but more difficult for me to get my message out. That is just, hey guys, no, it's actually a huge problem, electrosmog, and there are credible scientific studies, and we need to reduce the levels. We need to start practicing safe tech habits and not put a cell phone in your pocket and this and that. But I will get censored even if I don't have a message that is conspiracy theorist or hateful or anything like that. So unfortunately, you take these arbitrary decisions on what should be censored and what should not, and you cut off a lot of people freedom of speech for nothing, literally. So I think it's a slippery slope, and I think that it's not the way to go, to censor materials on the internet like that. And I think that, well, you know, the David Icke interview, a lot of what he said, I never listened to David Icke in my entire life, so I don't endorse him or anything. But a lot of what he said about 5G, about the surveillance, and a lot of it made sense to me. A lot of it was valid, and he knows what he's talking about when it comes to electrosmog. So all I can say is that it was valid. And then some of his views, maybe people don't agree with. But should you shut down an entire news, alternative news channel over it? No, I don't think you should. And I think that now London Real is going to do their own thing. And what YouTube and Facebook and Reddit and LinkedIn better be ready for is alternative platforms that become bigger than theirs. And when it's going to happen, they're going to freak out. And you will see these tech giants retract their policies on censorship, because they will be forced financially to do so. And this is what's coming for them long term. I would tend to predict that.
Right. I'm looking forward to that day, to be honest with you. And, in the meantime, I'm going to have to figure out a way to get this show out to people.
Exactly. You were mentioning just the fact that you mentioned 5G and COVID. You know that there are Google bots and Facebook and YouTube bots listening to the videos, transcribing them, and then deciding if it's valid or if it should be banned. So it's all AI based. So the AI is listening to every video on the internet or as much as they can. It's crazy. It's not even human-based, so there's no judgment there. It's like, oh, this is COVID and 5G, right?
And if you know anything about machine learning, there's a huge margin of error there.
Exactly.
And a lot of people can get silenced needlessly. Well, Nick, number one, I want to thank you so much for coming on here and talking about this. The article is called, I think it was Inconvenient Facts About COVID-19 Panic, right?
Yeah, eight inconvenient facts to consider. I don't even know my own title, but there's going to be, I don't know when this is going to come out, but within my goal is May 4th. May 4th is supposed to be in Quebec when the lockdown is going to be lifted a little bit. So I wanted to celebrate that by publishing my second article. I don't even know if it's going to be lifted, to be honest. They're kind of freaking out still, but I'm going to have a second article, and this one's going to get into just to tease it out, the differences between COVID and what I call CP, the Corona Panic. So, and why I think that we've been fighting two different viruses. And some people like me are kind of fighting COVID right now, which is 0.1, 0.4% mortality rate. And some people still think that it's CP out there, the kind of deadly virus is going to kill everyone. So I think it's going to be a good read, but I'm slowly getting, hacking away through it. And it's a very difficult task, but it's going to be a nice one.
I'll look forward to that. And people can find you. What's your main website is the emfguy.com, right?
The emfguy.com. Exactly. Yeah.
The emfguy.com. And then on, where do you hang out the most on social media?
It's mainly Facebook, but I'm not very, very active on social, but you'll find me there. If you want to follow my work, it's really the EMF guy. You'll find my newsletter, and I have a free report about 5G that is very factual and calm. You'll find it on the main page. So there's going to be more information. I want my information to, you know, this is one of the first times in my life that talking about another issue just because I'm politically involved or personally involved. So I hesitated a lot before doing that and doing an interview like that. I did two interviews worldwide about the topic of COVID, but to me, it's a citizen scientist job that I'm taking on to just debate about it. Again, I don't have all the truth. I don't either about EMS. It's always a topic of debate. But if we can stay calm, we can stay rational, and we can stick to the facts and the figures and then bring them to the table, we'll get through it. And this is really what I want to offer on my website is more information and also practical information about what the heck should you do with your cell phone and with your Wi-Fi router and how to kind of reduce your EMF load, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. Well, again, Nick, I want to thank you so much. To everybody out there, I want to thank you guys for listening to this. Those of you who have gotten past the firewalls and found the episode that are going to be put up to keep people from listening to this. And, you know, above everything, I think the real enemy is fear. It's always fear. Mm-hmm. Fear is going to keep you from living your life. Fear is going to keep you from doing the things you want to do. Fear is going to constantly keep you looking over your shoulder and turn you into a bitter person. And so, I think if anything, if we control what the government does and control you. So, again, I want to thank everybody out there for listening. We'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. And this is Chris Albert and Nick Pinault, and we are out. All right, guys, I hope that you enjoyed that episode with Mr. Nick Pinault. Again, I highly suggest you go and check out that article. We're going to have it linked up on the show notes for this episode. And if you want to check out more about Nick, you can head over to www.theemfguy.com. That's www.theemfguy.com. Sherbrooke.com. He's a really great guy. He's a really, really good thinker. I love his writing. I love the way he approaches these issues. He doesn't approach it from like a tinfoil hat perspective. He's the author of a book called The Non-Tinfoil Hat Guide to EMFs and How They Affect Your Health. And there's some real evidence to suggest that these little radiation magnets that we're carrying around with us, our cell phones, could have a significant impact on our health. And I want to have him on again to talk about those issues. You know, I've been doing the Warrior Soul podcast now for 4 years, and it has been the greatest mission of my life. I love doing this show. And like I said to you at the beginning of this podcast, I am doing some other things. I've got some other projects. I'm working with Fortress Anchors, mainly because I'm called to it right now. I think that bringing manufacturing back to America is such a huge mission, and I want to be a part of that. But my work here with Warrior Soul is never going to be over, and it's going to continue throughout my life. So I don't want you guys to worry about this podcast not continuing or anything like that. Life has been hectic over the past few weeks. I've still been trying to put out 3 episodes a week. I might miss an episode over the next week or so because I do have to travel to Florida briefly to set some things up for the move. But either way, I am committed to continuing this show for you. All I ask from you guys in return, like I always say, I don't care if you spend a dime with Warrior Soul. You know, we love it when you buy t-shirts. We love it when you sign up for our mastermind because, well, the mastermind is outstanding, the Warriors Obituary Society. But the real thing here is I'm trying to reach as many veterans as possible to help to change their lives. So if you enjoy our episodes, please share them out. Please write us a written rating and review. That's all I really want from you. And beyond that, we are going to be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. If you've got feelings, if you've got questions, reach out, hit us up over social media. Happy to debate, happy to do an informed debate, a civil debate. Like I said before, I just don't tolerate trolls or anything like that because you're taking away from the mission. So with that, guys, I'll be back at you soon. This is Chris Albert, the Warrior Soul Podcast, and I am out.